Realities of life under the sun. And it started out sort of depressing. It didn't mention God. And the beginning of this chapter doesn't even mention God either. It kind of goes through 11 verses. And basically it's saying that outside of God, without God, that life is short. It's elusive. It's hard to kind of grab hold of. Ever try to grab hold of life? Like, hey, I really got this thing figured out. And then you get like a left field curve with like, whoa, where'd that come from? And then you don't have a hold of life. That life is often just very repetitive. Right? You just kind of go through, even if you're home from school, you go through school, you start a semester, you study a bunch, you got midterms, and you study some more, and then you get finals, and you just do it semester after semester and semester, year after year. Kids, you right? Wake them up, get them to school, get them home, do homework, put them to bed, wake them up, right? It just goes on and on and on, 365 days. Yeah, I look forward to summer more than my kids do. I'm like, all right, we don't have to do this bedtime thing. We don't have to make sure you have all the homework and the daggone spelling test on Friday. Like, we don't have to do that stuff for a little bit. So I'm glad when that repetition breaks. But life is repetitive. And even what we see that last part, like, what's he talking about? Like, men are the same as beasts. He's saying, hey, at the end of it all, you're going to die. It's going to be over. It's short. It's there. And so the first chapter has a sort of big picture view of all of life. And then last week, Jeremy went into just sort of just different seasons or different times or different pursuits of life and try to find life and meaning in the midst of them. He got more smaller picture with things like pursuing wisdom and pleasure and wealth and leaving a legacy and these ideas. And they're saying, hey, if you put all your hope in those things, they don't last either. They're fleeting, just like all of life is as well. And so what chapter 3 does, he comes and puts those two things together. And he gives us this big picture of time. That's the whole point of it. And the sort of biggie on the eye chart is that God is over time. God is in control of time, that we're, which is a good thing. And then, but we're bound by time. We have a limited amount of time. It's actually freeing if you think about it. Like, hey, I don't have to be God. A lot of our problems come when we try to take on the attributes of God that we don't have. Right? God's omniscient. It means he's everywhere. We get in trouble when we try to be what? Omniscient. We try to be everywhere. Right? Anybody else do that? Like, you're like, oh, I can. I did it, I think it was Friday. I was like, oh, yeah, I can do this, then this, then this, then this. That should all go great. But didn't go great. I made it to pick up the kids on time. They didn't work. That was it. So I did actually. I made that one. I was late getting home from fishing. But other than that, I was there. But why? We try to be omniscient. We try to be everywhere. We try to do everything. Right? No. God's the only one that can hold all things together. We try to know everything, but only God is all knowing. And the same thing with time. There's only God is above time. And when we look at our lives, when we look at sort of the big picture, they're made up of so many different pieces. They're made up of different times and seasons. They're made up of different people and events and circumstances, right? Different times and different places, even the places that you live, even the seasons of life you are, say, even with your kids, they're all different. One book used the illustration of like a Lego creation. If you look at Legos, we're not in a Lego season right now. My feet stepping on them is thankful for that. But if you get a big bucket of Legos, it just looks like this sort of big jumbled mess, right? But then what's amazing about Legos is that when you take that jumbled mess and you follow the directions and you put them all together, it makes something beautiful. Right? And so our seasons of life is like that. It's made up of all these little pieces that God's putting together, that he's locking them together to make these beautiful stories of our lives. Now, some of the seasons are more painful than other seasons. Some of the seasons feel like you're stepping on a Lego, right? You get those? You're like, where did that come from? Some seasons feel very inconsequential. Is that a word? Yeah, something like that. They don't seem that important, right? You're like, hey, why am I going through this right now? But have you ever put together a Lego set or some IKEA furniture and forgot that one little piece? Yeah. Right? What do you have to do? You got to like start all the way over. So God's saying like, hey, all the times, all the seasons, all the different things that you go through are important. They all matter. They're all making this greater story. And the big point of this passage is saying that God is sovereign. that he's over all the times, that he set the times and the season all so that people will stand in awe before him. Like, that's the response. Chapter 3, verse 14 says, I know that everything God does, God does everything, it says, will endure forever. And it says, God does it so people will revere him. People will have awe of him. People will live in light of him. People will, as that song said, center their life on him. They will give him praise because that's what true life is. Because the people of Israel were just like us, right? They were super busy trying to stay alive and go forward. They're super busy. And when you get super busy, one of the things that we do is we tend to forget God, right? When we get super busy, we want to act like we're in charge of our lives. And so we get super busy. We start doing all these different things. We sort of try and take on these attributes of God. And usually not even on purpose. Like, God, I hate you today. No. Like, we just forget. And we get super busy. We get going. We think we're in charge of our lives. And we think it's all up to us. And then we just forget God. And that's what was happening with the people of Israel. The drift is to move away from God. And so he's reminding them, let me give you this big picture. Let me remind you of who this God is. Let me remind you that there's one that's over all of time, that's created all things, that's ordering all the little pieces, all the little seasons to make this beautiful picture at the end. And the first 8 verses just give this, I just call it the beautiful complexity of life. He just paints this picture of the realities of life. And verse 1 is just sort of this banner over the next 2. That just, it's a statement of the totality of life that then gets fleshed out in verses 2 through 8. He says, but for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. And then verses 2 to 8 just kind of give this complete summary of the various seasons of life. And so it's just showing this is all of life. It's a complete picture. There's some like Hebrew poetry stuff going on that we don't really get in English, but that there's 28 different things. Like the number 7 in the Hebrew language, it means completeness. It means fullness. So even the number of words that are used shows that, like, hey, this is just showing it encapsulates all of life. There's a thing that they do that in, again, in poetry that shows 2 opposites of something, life and death, mourning, weeping, and laughing. And it's meant to show that, like, hey, those 2 extremes and everything in between. So he's just given us a picture of the totality of life. And one thing that's important for us to see is that it's just not that, hey, these things are going to happen. Matt Chandler, who's a pastor in Dallas, he talks about that these were the ingredients for life. That God's actually using all these things to mold us and shape us and conform us so that we might know him and be like him. And he uses this great illustration of like ingredients in a cake, right? Everybody likes cake. If you don't, I'm sorry. So everybody likes cake. Cake's amazing. It's amazing. I'm not talking about the calories and all that stuff like that. I'm just saying, like, you eat a piece of cake, it's amazing. And so he's saying, hey, the totality of life is beautiful. The finished product is beautiful. It's like cake. But he said, to make a cake, you need flour. Like, have you ever tried to eat flour? It's disgusting, right? So it's hard. It's not fun. It doesn't taste great. So there's some things in life that are like flour. Like, I'm not going to pick that. Talk to my sister. She was 32 years old, had 2 kids under 4, and got breast cancer. Like, she wouldn't have picked that. Did it shape her? Absolutely. It changed her. But so God uses the flower. God uses even the weeping, the mourning, the times we have to let go. He uses those things to what? Make a good cake. Because flour alone tastes terrible, but cake without flour? I don't even care what you substitute in there. It doesn't taste the same. It's not good, all right? You can keep telling yourself it. It's not. Flour makes it good, right? And so it's the same with life. So both these amazing good things are from God, and these, we don't like this part, the hard things, the things that we wouldn't pick, the death and the mourning and the weeping, it those are all part of this ingredients for life. And it's really complex and it's really hard to understand. So there's some things in life that are really, really good. There's some things in life that are really hard. That's what we see here on these two different extremes. And some of the stuff is just sort of like in between. It's just kind of going path. And so when we know this, when we understand this, it gives us wisdom to help navigate life. We're not surprised by it. And so another thing is, it's important for us to understand all these seasons, they're divine actions before they become human activities. They're divine actions. God set the seasons before they become human actions. So the laughing is from God. And so we laugh, we respond to it. Or say like a healing, like God, like he wants us to heal. He wants us to restore. He wants us to make things new. So, but before we do those things, he's creating them. So these things are from God. These ingredients are from God. I know that's hard. And people are like, well, why does God have these things? Like, I don't know. But somehow these ingredients, the good, the bad, the hard things we go through, make a beautiful pictures. And then we respond to them in our activities. And so he just goes through these lists. And he starts in verse 2 with this, a time to be born and a time to die. He starts with the big picture of our lives. He says, God's over that. He says, I created you in your mother's womb. I knit you together. Job 14 says that your days are determined. He knows the day you're going to be born and he knows the day you're going to die. It's already set. No matter how much we try to like stave it off, it's set. He's over those things. He says there's a time to plant and a time to pluck up. There's just agricultural things. Anybody from kind of Midwest farming world, you know, it's like, hey, this is when we plant things, and then here's where we pull things up. Here's when we harvest. It's the same thing for us in life. There's sometimes that we're called to put down our roots. Right? South Florida is a hard place for that. People will come like, hey, I'm going to do that. And then like, hey, this is hard. So I'm going to uproot. I'm going to go. But sometimes God's calling us like, no, like, I want you to stay there. Right? There's a book called Sacred Roots, it's called. And he talked about like the old Great Commission was kind of like a go and make disciples. He says in our sort of upwardly mobile society, he said, maybe the new call is to stay and plant roots. And stay in a place and set up shop that God might use you, and God might create something and do something where you are. Because there's a time for putting down roots, and there's also a time to go. There's a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up. Sometimes things need to just be broken down. Right? Sometimes we're broken down in order for God to build us up, to construct. This is just all part of life. A lot of these things he goes through are very relational. Because a lot of our seasons are determined by who's around us, who God's put into our lives. And so there's seasons of weeping and laughing. We're called to weep with one another, and we're called to laugh and celebrate with one another. There's a time for mourning, and there's a time for dancing. Another commentator talked about, like, if you just think about it, say within motherhood, so like, for me, the person who you do the mother-son dance with, it's a time for celebrating, it's time for laughing, right? This person had this huge impact on me. So there's a celebration in that. For me, that was, how many years ago? 14? 13 and a half year, right? So it was a celebrating, like, hey, my mom had gotten me to this point. Now, the conversation I had with my mom yesterday is, how's your cancer going? It's a time for mourning, right? She's sick. And so the same person, same relationship, but there's a time for what? Celebrating and a time for mourning. God using both of those at the same time. There's a time to cast away and a time to gather stones. He's saying there's a time to accumulate stuff. Sometimes you just need to store stuff up, and sometimes you need to distribute and give out. There's a time to embrace. There's a time to refrain from embracing. A time to let, seek, or to give up, to move on, to just let somebody deal with it themselves. There's a time to keep and a time to cast away. I'm always for the one to cast away. Ask my kids. I'm always like clearing out the garage, getting rid of stuff, and I get mad. I'm like, it's all just stuff. Let's get rid of it all, right? So, but sometimes there's stuff that you just need to keep, and there's some stuff you just need to cast away, to move on from. There's a time to tear and a time to sow. What that tearing is, it's an act of repentance. They would tear their clothes and mourn the sin of themselves or of the nation. And so they would tear their clothes. But there's also a time to move on from the grieving and be restored, to be restored with things. He says there's a time to keep silent and a time to speak. Guys, we just need to figure this one out for Mother's Day, right? Time to just not say anything and a time to, you need something, right? There's one pastor he always talked about. He's like, he would just simply ask his wife. He's like, do you want me just to listen right now, or are you asking for advice? He's like, it was like a question that saved a lot of anxiety, a lot of worry, a lot of trouble. And let me just ask, like, am I supposed to be listening, or do you want me to speak into this, right? Because there's a time to speak and a time to keep silent. There's a time for love and there's a time for hate. There's things in this world that we should hate. There's evil in this world that we should hate. There's a time for war and a time for peace. So sometimes there's just going to be conflict. That there's atrocities that go on in our world that we need to fight against, that we need to war against. And other times we just need to fight for peace. And he's saying all these things encompass all of life. And it takes wisdom to navigate all of them. And these things are just, they're generalizations, right? Not all of us have gone to war, right? Not all of us are being a part of something that's been killed. It doesn't mean everybody, it's descriptive and not prescriptive. Author Zach Aswine said, but what is helpful, he says, to be forewarned is to be forearmed. To be forewarned, to know what's coming, is to be forearmed. That you're actually ready for it. You're prepared for it. Like, so you're not as surprised when these things happen. I remember driving down to Boca for a meeting with Chan, who's the pastor down Spanish River now, and we had just moved down here. We've only been down here a couple months. He's just like, hey, I just want to let you know. He's like, I've been around this long enough. He's like, the first year in sort of like church planting, you're starting something new. You got this vision. You want to push back darkness with light. You want to do these things. Like, it's real. Usually really awful things happen, just so you know. Like, really hard things happen. He's like, I just see it time and time and time again. So we went through some really hard things that first year. I was sad. I was worried. But I wasn't surprised. I was like, oh, I anticipated this. I was forearmed. I was ready. And so we need to know that these things are going to happen in our life. This Bible I have, the Spirit of the Reformation Study Bible, it says, one way to avoid despair is to pursue life's task according to divine timing. One way to avoid despair is to pursue life's task according to divine timing. And what he's saying is that we just need to know what is coming. What season are we in? Man, is this a celebration sort of season? Don't feel bad about that. Enjoy it. Love it. Thank God for it. Is it a mourning season? Is it a season like, hey, this isn't what I planned my life to be. This isn't what I signed up for. This is a hard thing. But we can avoid despair when we understand these different seasons are from God. What's he trying to do? Where can I learn? Where can I lean on him? Where I can thank him? Where can I depend on him more in the midst of this season? And what's fascinating about the eight verses, it just lays out this completeness of life. It doesn't say anything about how these things happen. It doesn't even say anything about why these things happen. It just says that they happen. And can we all agree that they happen? We see this. And it doesn't even say anything about who set the times and why they set the times. But what he does is the next section, he answers the question. The first eight verses should just say like, hey, yeah, that's true. I agree with that, the why. And then he gets into that in verses 9 to 22. And I just call it this comforting challenge. And in one sense, his answer is very comforting. It's meant to bring us comfort in the midst of all these realities of life. And it's also a challenge to trust in his answer, to trust in him the most. And because what he does is he points us to the reality of who God is. He points us to who this God is, what this God is doing. It's this God that brings us great comfort, but it's also challenging some personal things within us. The first thing we see in verse 11 that is a comfort is that we can see that God is over time. That we can trust that God is sovereign. Look at verse 11. He says, "He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning and the end." So he's saying, like, he's put eternity in our heart. He's saying, like, hey, you're made to be eternal. You weren't made to be temporal. You're made for more. This is why everybody wonders, like, hey, what happens when you die? What goes on there? It's a thing that everybody has. And he says that's in us, that desire to know, but we don't know. We don't know what happens from beginning to end. We just see the pile of Legos on the ground. We don't see what they're being formed into. We don't see the end picture, how they're being used. But the good news is that God does. It says that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. That God is sovereign. That God's over all of time. And the call of the scriptures is to trust in God's sovereignty. That all the seasons have purpose. That the good seasons, heck, the good mornings have a purpose. And then that morning goes south by the afternoon. Like, hey, that has a purpose too. And this is challenging for us because we like to be in control. Right? Does anybody else like to be in control? Like to kind of know what's going to happen that day? Right, we'll get a little scared sometimes. Like, hey, is there going to be a phone call? Is there going to be an email? Is something going to happen this day that's going to just throw me off? Because why? We want to be in controls. We spend our lives trying to control the uncontrollable. But when we trust that God's sovereign, we can trust that he's doing all of it for our good. It's the same thing with parents and children, right? When kids get really frustrated with what? Boundaries. They don't like the routines. You ever heard a kid like, oh yeah, super excited to go to bed right now. Oh, I'm super excited not to eat any of those donuts until after the service. Said no kid ever, right? So if we let a kid loose right now, the first thing they would do is not just go eat one piece of donut, they would go eat all the donuts, right? I don't think they're, yeah, maybe just our kids, but whatever. You guys are doing a better job than us. But all the kids, they would just go that. But we love them. So there's boundaries. We know they need a bedtime. We know they need to go up. Now, the kids don't understand that, like, it's good for them to go there. And when you say, like, no, you can't have Jimmy over tomorrow because we got this, this, and this. They don't have they're just mad that Jimmy can't come over. They don't understand that you have this greater plan for them. You understand the plan. They don't, right? And it's the same thing with God. He understands the whole plan. We don't. We're living in the midst of it all. David Gibson, in his commentary, said this. He says, "I can experience different seasons knowing they are a part of a bigger picture that I cannot see, but which is visible to a good and wise God who sees the whole as beautiful." And if we trust that God is good, if we trust that God is wise, and the scriptures say that he is, that he sees the whole and he's making it into something beautiful, it gives us comfort. It gives us rest. It gives us peace. Aaron brought up a great illustration at community group last week. I told you I'd steal it. What is it, crocheting?
Cross stitch.
Right? In cross stitching, if you look on the back side of the cross stitch, what does it look like?
Mess.
Chaos. Mess. It's all like just thread, string coming together. And you flip it over, what is it?
Beautiful
picture. That's what God, so sometimes we're like the back of cross stitch. Right? But God is creating something beautiful. God is creating something bigger. Or it's like being, we don't have stained glass windows. But if we had stained glass windows, it would be like being, that's our version. It'd be like being so close to one pane of glass that you can't see the whole picture. But if you draw out, you can see the whole picture. You see this greater beauty. And so we need to trust and have comfort in God sees the whole picture. He's forming us. He's making it into something beautiful. And that's what allows us to go through the times of mourning and weeping and of losing and of not embracing and of hardship. We can trust that God is doing it. The second thing that we see in bringing comfort to the midst of the realities of life is that we can have joy and do good. God's calling us to align our doing with whatever he does. Look at verse 11 or verse 12. It says, I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. It connects back up to verse 11 where it says, find out what God has done from the beginning. And so God calls us in the midst of this life that we don't understand everything, that we don't know everything, but God calls us to align our doing, to align the things that we do with him, with his ways, with his purposes. It evokes creation language. Over and over in Genesis 1 and 2, it says, in the beginning, God did, and it was good, and it was good. God created it, and it was good. It was good. And so God calls us to align our purposes with his. He says, be fruitful and multiply and have dominion over the world. And so he's saying that, hey, with what you do, align it with what God is doing. And this challenges our culture, which says, hey, make it all about you. God's given you everything for yourself. Your life is about you. You're ultimate. This command is very other focused because what God commands us is to love God and love people. And so when we align our purposes with God, it's less about us and more about others. We begin to live lives of loving others. And so in this, there is that call for us to use our time wisely. Philip Ryken said that the time is the most precious commodity we have. And look, everybody's got the same amount of time, right? Not everybody has the same amount of money. Not everybody has the same amount of skill. Not everybody's got the same amount of smartness. But we all got the same amount of time. And so how do we use our time to further God's purposes, to align ourselves with him? When Karina and I were in premarital counseling, the pastor said, hey, make decisions according to where can you have the biggest impact for the kingdom of God? That's the ultimate thing that drives the decisions you make. Now, we haven't done that perfectly, but we were talking, was it last week or the week before? Recently, we were talking like, hey, we've made a lot of mistakes. We haven't done everything perfect, but like in general, we've really sought to do that. We haven't made all our decisions like, hey, this is going to be what's best for us financially, or this is what's best for us personally. This is what we want right now, right? If it was for what I wanted right now, we would have never moved from St. Louis. I wanted to live by my niece. I wanted to live by my nephews. I wanted those things. I wouldn't have been uprooted. I wouldn't have picked that at that point. But that wasn't what was best. And so it allows you to make decisions that don't always feel comfortable. Because it's not about you anymore. It's about aligning your purposes with God. How can I best love God? How can I best love others? And you begin being shaped by those things. And God's not doing that to make you miserable. Like, we're happier than we've ever been. This is amazing. And so we can have joy. We can be happy in the midst of the doing good. Verse 13. It says also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. This is for all the people that think Christianity is boring. Right? What does God say? Eat, drink, and enjoy life. Like, that's the takeaway. Hey, you can't control it. God's in control of it. So enjoy the life that he has given you. Enjoy the life that he's given. It's calling to live a life of gratitude. Now, the challenge becomes that we would that the tendency that you see is that people would worship the creation over the creator. So I'm going to enjoy it, but I'm going to enjoy it void of God. The illustration I use is that Jesus heals 10 people, 10 lepers, and they're all glad they're healed, but it says only one came back to thank him, to acknowledge him, to be with him. That's what God wants us to do in enjoying creation. He wants to enjoy him in the midst of the gifts of life that he gives us, to live a life of gratitude. Because if we worship the creation over the creator, it just becomes idolatry. And those things won't satisfy us. It's what Jeremy talked about last week. We can never have enough. And so to avoid it, we need people who gratefully receive things. I like this. One commentator said that, he says, do not be a user and a taker. Be a receiver and a thanker. Like, I can remember that, right? Don't be a user and a taker. Like, hey, God, thank you. I'm just going to consume. I'm just going to take. Like, this is like, yeah, this is like a kid verse, right? We need to pound this into our kids. We need to pound it in our own heads as well. Do not be a user and a taker. Be a receiver and a thanker. Right? Because we know it's all from God. And so we can receive it. We can have thankfulness to it. But we can also be generous with it. We can live a life of gratitude. And the last thing we see as how to have this comfort in the midst of the uncertainties of life is that we can have comfort that to know that everything that God does has eternal significance. It says in verse 14, I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it nor anything taken from it. God has done it so that people will fear before him. It says that nothing can be added. Whatever God does endures forever. It brings purpose to everything that we're doing. And this, I think, challenges a perspective that the mundane things don't matter. We kind of live in a culture that always has to be hype. It also always has to be exciting. It also has to be like just big and different and awesome. But God's saying like, hey, those mundane things, they actually matter. So being a mom matters. Working matters. Being a friend that will cry with somebody matters. All of it matters when it's done with God and for God. So anything that rescues, if there's something that's lost, anything that rescues, anything that restores, there's broken things, anything that brings restoration, if there's anything that renews, that takes things that aren't right and makes them new, it all matters. And we can do that all the time. And so we can have great comfort that knowing that the mundane things of life have eternal significance when they're for God and his purposes. And then verse 14, we also saw the point of all of it, that it results in a life of awe. It says so that they would, so that people would fear before him. That word for fear means that they would have awe of God, that they would revere God. So we should see that God has done all these things. It shouldn't make us feel like, oh, I'm so busy, I'm going to forget God and move on from God and kind of act like I'm God. It should cause us to stop and have awe, to revere him, to trust him, to center our lives, as that song said, on him as the sovereign one who controls everything. It should bring us this great rest. And as I was studying and looking at this, I just kept thinking, so what allows us to enjoy? What allows us to do good? What allows us to take pleasure in life in the midst of those things that are hard? Because, I mean, I think it's easy to look like, oh, yeah, born. But in the midst of death, in the midst of hurt, in the midst of mourning, like what allows us to have joy in the midst of it? In verse 15, and really from there on out, it says that God seeks. It says, that which is already has been, and that which is to be already has been. It says, and God seeks what has been driven away. God seeks what has been lost. God seeks what has not gone right. It's like a shepherd seeking after a sheep that goes away. He pursues it. And what this teaches is that God will rescue, God will retrieve, God will use every injustice, all the wickedness, even death is what this passage goes into. God will retrieve those. He'll retrieve all the lost moments of time. That's the promise of the scriptures. Revelation 21 says that he's going to come back and wipe away every tear, that death will be no more. And so we trust him in that. In the midst of all these things, it says that God seeks it. God seeks the brokenness of the world and makes it new. And we can trust it because that's what we've seen in Christ. That's what he's done. That's why Jesus died on the cross. To undo it. Galatians 4 says, when the right time had come, it said God sent his son in order to redeem those under the law so that we might receive adoption as children. That God redeems, God rescues, God renews, God makes all things new. And the cross shows that we can trust him in that. Even when we don't know. And that's why even as we move into communion, it's a time to celebrate. Yes, there is brokenness. Yes, there's things to weep. Yes, there's things to mourn. Yes, there's things to cry out about. But it says that Jesus came and took those upon himself. Jesus took that for us to redeem it, to make it new. And it's also a celebration. It's a time to celebrate. It's a time to laugh. It's a time to sing. It's a time to have joy because he's overcome all of it. He's bringing new life. And we can begin to enjoy life in the midst of it all. And so life doesn't have to just be this kind of constant up and down, kind of rolling with the punches sort of thing. We can know like, no, all of it's from God, and we can trust him right in the middle of it all. Let's pray.